Does traveling to Greece and Italy sound interesting to you? If so, we'd like to invite you to come with us on Mormonism Research Ministries' trip to these biblical lands in September 2014. In Italy, we'll see the Appian Way, the Catacombs, and Paul's House. In Greece, imagine the experience of seeing Corinth and Athens, two very important New Testament cities. Want more information? Visit theapologeticstudybibletour.com, all one word. Again, that's theapologeticstudybibletour.com. We'd love to have you with us. Viewpoint on Mormonism, the program that examines the teachings of the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints from a biblical perspective. Viewpoint on Mormonism is sponsored by Mormonism Research Ministry. Since 1979, Mormonism Research Ministry has been dedicated to equipping the body of Christ with answers regarding the Christian faith in a manner that expresses gentleness and respect. And now, your host for today's Viewpoint on Mormonism.
So glad you could be with us for this edition of Viewpoint on Mormonism. I'm your host, Bill McKeever, founder and director of Mormonism Research Ministry. With me today is Eric Johnson, my colleague at MRM. I'll tell you, Eric, I have been chomping at the bit to get back onto this subject. Now, as we mentioned a couple of weeks ago, we were going to take a little bit of a break from discussing what has come to be known as the Swedish Rescue, or it was a fireside that was held in Stockholm, Sweden on November 28, 2010, when two historians from the LDS Church, Richard Turley and Marlon Jensen, were told that they were to go speak to a group of Swedish members of The Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints who were struggling with some of the things that they were reading on the internet about Mormon history. Mormon history that, according to these members, did not seem to coincide with the way they, as LDS members, were taught Mormon history. This goes back to a man by the name of Hans Mattson. And just to bring you all back up to speed, Hans Mattson, I guess you could say, his story went viral when back in July, the New York Times ran an article on him. And I think it'd be pertinent, Eric, if we just read the first few paragraphs of that article so that listeners who may have forgotten after 2 weeks or maybe did not hear the broadcast kind of brings them up to where we are today on this. And I might mention, if you want to hear the previous broadcast dealing with this subject matter, then please do so by going to our website at mrm.org. And in the upper right-hand corner, you're going to see a box that says On Air. When you click on Air, it will take you to our archives where you can not only hear the past broadcast dealing with this meeting in Stockholm, Sweden, but all of our past broadcasts going clear back to the beginning.
This article from July 20th, 2013, New York Times, is titled Some Mormons Search the Web and Find Doubt. And this is what it says. In the small but cohesive Mormon community where he grew up, Hans Mattson was a solid believer and a pillar of the church. He followed his father and grandfather into church leadership and finally became an area authority overseeing the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints throughout Europe. When fellow believers in Sweden first began coming to him with information from the internet that contradicted the church's histories and teachings, he dismissed it as, quote, anti-Mormon propaganda, end quote, the whisperings of Lucifer. He asked his superiors for help in responding to the members' doubts, and when they seemed to only sidestep the questions, Mr. Mattson began his own investigation. But when he discovered credible evidence that the church's founder, Joseph Smith, was a polygamist and that the Book of Mormon and other scriptures were rife with historical anomalies, Mr. Mattson said he felt that the foundation on which he had built his life began to crumble.
And this is not atypical of what happens when a very faithful member of The Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints starts looking beyond the church-approved curriculum, and even sometimes the church-approved curriculum, if you know where to look. But he goes on the internet, and he starts finding out that some of the questions that his fellow members have are actual, real questions.
Now, he's an area authority. I think we have seen, though, in the last few years, more and more people who have positions of authority, not as high as he, but bishops and others who are just leaving in droves, along with the membership. And perhaps they're in the same kind of situation. Perhaps they are finding out things, and when they start to go to their superiors, who are going to be higher up than they, I think flabbergasted at the lack of answers. And I think that's what happened with Hans Manson.
Well, you mentioned about members leaving in droves. That actually takes us to another article that was in Reuters a while back, and back in 2012, titled Mormonism Besieged by the Modern Age. And that phrase was actually used when Marlon Jensen, one of the historians that was present at this 2010 meeting in Stockholm, was in Logan, Utah, and was asked by a member in the group that he was addressing, who asked about members that were leaving in droves. That's the phrase. And Jensen said, "We are aware," and I'm quoting from the article, "We are aware," said Jensen, according to a tape recording of his unscripted remarks, "and I'm speaking of the 15 men that are above me in the hierarchy of the church. They really do know, and they really care," he said. Now, when I brought this up to a Mormon just recently, he acted as if I was not telling the truth. And the point is this is going on. And now his argument was, yeah, but our church keeps building buildings. And to him, that was a sign of growth. There's no doubt that the Mormon church is growing, quote unquote, because they're consistently gaining at least about 250,000 every year. But their convert baptism rate peaked way back in 1990.
Right.
And so they have not reached the number since that they reached in 1990. These are convert baptisms, which I think is a fair way of giving a good understanding of how fast this church is growing, because we know that the Mormon church puts a lot of emphasis on families. So naturally, you expect the Mormon families to continue to procreate and raise the numbers that way when the offspring become 8 years of age, or the age of accountability, and are baptized in the Mormon church. That's going to cause some growth as well. But it's the convert baptism rate that I always like to look at.
Well, and back in 1990, as you pointed out, they were growing at a 4% plus clip. That's an amazing number. These past years, they're growing under 2%. So they're only at half the percentage that they were just a few decades ago. And if I might add, the Jehovah's Witnesses, the Watchtower Society, they have about half the membership of the Mormon Church, and yet they're still growing at 4%. In fact, their numbers are the same. They're growing at about 280,000 a year and with half the membership. So to me, I mean, yeah, the church is still growing. There's no doubt about it, but it has definitely slowed over these past few decades.
So if you're a Mormon out there who thinks, well, look at how fast our church is growing, I guess if you want to use that as a criteria for truth, maybe you ought to consider joining the Watchtower Society.
Yeah.
Now, I would never recommend that, because I think that's a horrible reason to join any organization. But still, I think it points out how that is not a real good argument for joining yourself with any group. Just because it may be growing doesn't mean that it's actually true. It could be that they're all wrong. Again, how do we find out which is true? And of course, coming from our biblical worldview, we would have to insist that if the teachings do not conform with what the Bible actually teaches, then that would not be a group that you would want to associate yourself with. Getting back to Hans Manson's story, and I think it's important that we do recap this, because we need to understand the context of this meeting that was held in 2010. Because of some of the questions that Hans Manson was raising, and of course a lot of those questions came from members who were asking him about some of these historical problems, Manson is not very satisfied with what he's learning as opposed to what he was already taught as a member of the Mormon Church. Now remember, Manson was a generational Mormon. His grandfather was the one who converted to Mormonism in Sweden. This is the situation that we have. Manson is raising these questions, and I have to assume, because of his position in the church, as you have said, Eric, being an Area 70, an Area Authority, third quorum of the 70, that's a pretty high position.
Mm-hmm.
It certainly is not as high as the First Presidency or the Council of the 12 or the First Quorum of the 70, but it's a very high position.
Mm-hmm.
I would have to assume that because of that high position, this is why the church paid particular attention to the Swedish members. They sent L. Tom Perry, a Mormon apostle, over there. They sent Ronald Raspin. Russell M. Nelson was sent over there. And now they're going to send these two Mormon historians, which, as we've mentioned before, was probably the better choice anyway, because the questions that the members are having in Sweden had to do with historical issues, not so much doctrinal issues.
We've listened to the transcript, and we've heard all of this 2-hour meeting, and we have the transcript in front of us. We don't always know when Hans is the one who's doing the talking, but I think we have figured out pretty much most of it. And he didn't seem satisfied throughout. He asked the hardest questions. He probed. He kept going, and he wanted answers. You could tell. So I definitely think they went there to appease Hans, because if they could get him back on board again, then perhaps there would not be the reverberation of those other 24 people who apparently had dissimilar issues, probably very much so because of Hans talking to them.
And as we've said, you and I, Eric, have listened to the recording because it was recorded. I don't know if the two historians knew about that or were happy with that, but it was recorded. We do have the transcript. We have gone along with the recording, with the transcript, for accuracy and also voice inflection. And as we've mentioned, there were a few times when it sounded like it might have been getting a little bit tense, but for the most part, it seemed like a very amicable talk that went on, the questions that were being asked of the historians and the way that they were answering. It certainly didn't sound like it was heated by any stretch of the imagination, but the questions, we think, were very good. The problem, I think, for the historians is, as I've mentioned this, I think they have a bad product to try and defend. Mm. Some of the behavior of Joseph Smith, as far as I'm concerned, and I admit I'm an outsider in a 21st century context, but even looking in the proper context of the 19th century, I find Joseph Smith's behavior reprehensible. And apparently a lot of these Swedish members, when they found out about his behavior, came to the same conclusion. So Jensen and Turley are going to try to assuage their concerns by giving them answers that they hope, I assume, will put Mormon history in a better light for them.
And you have to know that throughout this series we've been talking about historical issues. These are black and white kinds of issues that they're probing here that, I mean, it involves doctrine, of course, but they're not so concerned about God once being a man or the other doctrines that Mormonism teaches that are very unique. They want to know if this is not true, the historical basis of Mormonism has faults to it, then the whole thing comes tumbling down. And I think you would agree with that, Bill.
I think one of the big issues that you hear coming from at least Hans Mattson is they want to know, do you historians have a problem with this? And what I found amazing was that you had Jensen at the very beginning of this meeting say this amazing statement. He said, "There's nothing that I know about Mormonism that bothers me." Wow, that is an incredible statement. What we want to do now is to get back into this meeting and start looking at some of the questions that were asked and the answers that were given by these two LDS church historians.
Thank you for listening. If you would like more information regarding Mormonism Research Ministry, we encourage you to visit our website at www.mrm.org, where you can request our free newsletter, Mormonism Researched. We hope you will join us again as we look at another viewpoint on Mormonism. Looking for a book on Mormonism? The Utah Lighthouse Bookstore in Salt Lake City carries the largest selection of Christian books on Mormonism, including titles such as Mormonism, Shadow or Reality, and Mormonism 101. The Utah Lighthouse Bookstore is also a great place to get your questions answered. Open Mondays through Fridays, 10 a.m. to 5 p.m., and Saturdays from 1 to 5, the Utah Lighthouse Bookstore is located directly across from the Spring Mobile Ballpark at 1358 South and West Temple.